Senate Education Committee will come to order. Welcome everyone to the committee. Our assignment is huge. Public policy for the most important priority in Minnesota, our students, our future. You're on this committee because you believe in that. And I know that each of you is pregnant with ideas, and hopefully we can deliver on several of those good ideas during the session. Today, we have two resolutions. Resolutions to Congress, which they could do whatever they want, but important items addressing special education and No Child Left Behind. In about 15 minutes, we will address that and hear from several people in the audience. Prior to that, however, we're going to do introductions, and that'll be a chance for each of you, for a minute or so, to tell us about yourself, perhaps roll out some ideas, but within a minute, it's your choice. Following your introductions, and I'll start on that, we'll have staff introduce themselves, and then we'll go to the resolutions. Any questions at this point? Okay. I'm Chuck Wigger, serve as the chair, and I am entering my 11th year in the state Senate. My district is 55, which is North St. Paul, Maplewood, and Oakdale. I have three school districts, primarily North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and then a portion of the White Bear School District and Roseville District. Prior to the state Senate, I did serve for several terms on a school board in North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and it is my highest priority addressing education issues. I'm very honored to be in this new role as a member of the committee and chairing it as well. I salute Senator Kelly for the leadership he provided in the past, and for those of you that served earlier on the committee, I pledge to do my best in a bipartisan way for us to address these important issues. I also will hear all bills. I can't say that they'll all pass, but no bill will be left behind in the context that we won't hear it. If it advances, that will be up to us collectively. We also will go and visit schools. If you have a request in your district, we'll do our best to accommodate that. So a little background on myself, and I have an open door policy. If there's anyone that needs to contact me on an issue that you would like to make sure we discuss, please let me know, and I pledge to do my best on that. We'll continue on the Senator introductions, and we'll start to Senator Rummel.
Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. Needless to say, I'm pleased to be here also. The background I bring to my position on this committee is service on the White Bear Lake Area School Board for 9 years. I was its vice chair for the last 5 years, and I was chair of the East Metro Integration School District also for 5 years, and on that board for 7 years. So I have a long history struggling with the policies that come down from this noble house, and now to be sitting on the other side of the table feels a little bit new, and like so many of you, my focus is on the best interest of our students and the families we serve and the state as a whole, because so much of the state's future is linked to the future of our children.
I'm Leroy Stumpf, a state senator from, I represent Senate District 1. That's way up in the northwest corner of Minnesota, and takes in about parts or all of 7 counties up there. Probably the most distant one would be Kitson County, up by, you know, the Hallock area, Roseau, War Road, and then on down from Thief River Falls, Crookston, East Grand Forks. So it's a fairly sizable area, quite a diverse area. So we have some medium-sized schools, not really large schools, and then a lot of smaller schools. And I currently chair the E-12 Education Finance Division. And that's a change from last session, where we had the early childhood portion had their own finance division. And Senator Hottinger at that time chaired that. So now those two are together and under that finance division. So I'm looking forward to a good, productive year. I think there's a lot of excitement in trying to wrestle with many of the issues that we have. Seems like there's always more problems than there are solutions. And I think there's always more requests than there are resources. But we'll certainly try to do our best, and I'm happy to be on your committee.
And I'm Kathy Saltzman. I am the new state senator from Senate District 56, which includes Woodbury, Stillwater, Lake Elmo, and nine other communities. The three school districts that I represent are South Washington County, Stillwater Area Schools, and a small portion of North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale. I have been on the other side of this table for 10 years working as an education advocate with schools with C, and that has enabled me to really have a statewide perspective, and I hope to bring that to this table. The thing that I am most excited about is that over the past 10 years, I've had the opportunity to work with many of our new state senators who come with tremendous education backgrounds, and I'm so excited to be able to have what I feel will be very spirited discussions on how we're truly going to raise student achievement in this state. It will take investment. It's going to take some courage to look at new initiatives. And for that, I look to your input, people in my community, to our parents, and to our businesses.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's very nice to be on this committee again. I'm Senator Debbie Johnson from Senate District 49, Andover, Ham Lake, and Coon Rapids. I sat on this committee in 2000 to 2002. And I also was on the budget committee, Senator Stump's budget committee, from 2000 for 6 years. Because of the overlapping committee schedules, I couldn't go back on it. I'm going to miss it because I really love policy, or excuse me, budget. But I think policy is going to be really good, too. I have the largest school district in the state, so it's very important to be here representing them and the rest of the students in the state as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Senator Jeff Michelle. I represent the rough western suburbs of Edina and West Bloomington. And that overlaps with three school districts, including Edina, Bloomington, and a portion of the Hopkins School District. This is my second term in the Senate. It's my second term on this particular committee. I'm married to a teacher, and I have four daughters under the age of 11. We're all in public school now in Edina, so this everything that we touch and talk about in this committee hits pretty close to home. I want to thank Chairman Wieger for offering to take this show on the road, and I know we already have a couple of trips planned for the western suburbs, so we look forward to having you all out west. And the one issue that I'd flag, which has absolutely no support in my house, but is one that I will continue to push, is a longer school year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Ann Lynch. I represent Senate District 30. I come from the Rochester School Board, and I represent some other school districts as well, Plainview, Chatfield, Stuartville, and Dover Eota. And I'm very happy to be here. And like Senator Saltzman, I have spent a number of years in the audience and on the other side of this table advocating on behalf of Minnesota's students, and I look forward to this opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Hatt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Hahn. I'm a senator from District 42, which is Eden Prairie and part of Minnetonka, and I represent the Eden Prairie School District, the part of the Minnetonka School District, and part of the Hopkins School District. And I'm starting my second term in the Senate, and last term was a proud member of the Education Committee and also Senator Stump's Budget Committee, and I have the honor of being on both those committees again this year. My background before coming to the Senate, I was a school board member in Eden Prairie, served for three terms, and as Senator Wieger believes, I also believe that education is the number one issue that we face as a state. We need to find a way to do it more effectively. I think, frankly, that to make it work effectively, it will take more courage than it will take money, I think the policy decisions that we have to make are of more importance, in my view, than how much money we decide to spend. And I know we'll have some good discussions on different policy issues as we go forward this year. And I want to also thank Senator Wicker for the outreach that he has made to the members of the committee, particularly on the minority end, that he's been very gracious about keeping us informed and included. And we look very much forward to working with you and the rest of the committee this session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Senator Terry Bonoff. I represent the area right adjacent to Senator Hahn, and so we do work together. I represent Minnetonka School District, Wayzata School District, Hopkins School District, Robbinsdale School District, and a little piece of Osseo, so a lot of varying types of districts. We are going to be coming to my district very soon. We're going to be visiting the Minnetonka School District on the 22nd, the evening of the 22nd, where we'll be showcasing some of the advancements Minnetonka's made in technology. And so technology is an area that I think we as a committee ought to look closely at, because I think our ability to utilize technology as a tool for student achievement is critical, and that I'm hoping that coming to the Minnetonka School District and taking a look at what they're doing, we'll have an opportunity to see how more students in our state can take an advantage of that. Also, I'm a former corporate executive in the area of marketing, and stopped doing that to be home with my children, where I got very involved in the public schools as a co-chair of the Hopkins School District Legislative Action Coalition. So that's when I began to develop my passion for public policy as it relates to education. Thank you. And I'm a mother of four children, too. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, good afternoon. My name is Patricia Torres-Ray, and I am a new senator for District 62, and I am delighted to be here. This is one of my absolute top priorities. I am a mother of two children, 12 years old and 10 years old. And have been very involved in their education, and was involved in their schools as a volunteer, as a PTA member. So I am delighted to have this opportunity now in the Senate. I have also worked with the state of Minnesota as a program manager in policy issues involving children, predominantly for the last 14 years. And so this is a great opportunity for me to continue to advocate for the needs of children. And I am very interested in supporting public education and funding for public education.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Mike Jungbauer, Senate District 48, East Bethel, Oak Grove, Burns Township, Elk River, Ramsey, and Anoka. I have areas of four different school districts, a small bit of Forest Lake, St. Francis, Elk River, and Anoka Hennepin. I was on Senator Stump's E-12 budget for the last 4 years. And while I enjoyed that, I found that I'm more of a policy wonk, if you will, than a budget person, and I'm really excited to be here. I agree with Senator Hahn that I think some of the issues that we really face in the future for education mostly have to do with policy and where we go with policy, and what we decide are the key components for our children. Technology is a big thing. I'm a science and math geek, and I think that we've gotten away from keeping our kids excited about the neat things that are out there with science. So I look forward to being on this committee. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Jim Carlson, and I'm from Senate District 38, which includes the cities of Burnsville and Eagan. And I have three districts that I represent, 191, which is the West St. Paul District, 197, which is the West St. Paul District, 196, which is Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan, and 191, which is Burnsville. I've been married to a teacher for 36 years. She is the 2004 Minnesota German Teacher of the Year, and she is whispering in my ear a lot about her 37 students in her class, and I think that I want to make a difference here. It requires investment. I'm a retired engineer from 3M, and one of the things that you learn when you're with a high-tech company is it requires investment to make money. And what we need to do is make sure that our young people are prepared for competing in the world, and I think that we've lost some of that in this state, and I think what we need to do is follow some of the models we have, the Jay Krodowski model, a few others that have been involved in predicting how much we get back for every dollar that we invest. So I'm really pleased to be on this committee. This is one of my highest priorities.
Thank you.
Senator and
excuse members. Senator Stumpf.
I'm Sharon Erickson Ropes. I was elected. I represent the southeastern tip of the state of Minnesota. That's Winona County, Fillmore County, and Houston County. And I represent the Winona School District, also districts in La Crescent, Caledonia, Houston, Spring Grove, Rushford, Peterson, Chatfield, the Kingsland District, which is many small schools combined together, and also Lanesboro. I believe that education is Minnesota's greatest economic engine, and we have to pay attention to how not only how we're teaching our kids and what we're teaching them these days, but for the general well-being of the economics of the state. I have three grown children. Myself and my mother's a retired elementary school teacher. So I've been around education for a long time, and I have done everything from being local PTA member at our elementary school to being elected the state president of Minnesota State PTA. So we've been working very keenly with lots of the statewide education community organizations, and I've been living and breathing education actually for about the last 18 years. I come also as a school board member and twice elected school board chair in Winona. And I'm mostly concerned about updating our the funding formula. And I'm also very concerned about childhood obesity and then putting some more dollars into early childhood education.
Mr. Chair, I'm Rick Olsen, Senator from District 17, which is Chisago County, most of Isanti County, and part of Anoka and St. Francis. My path to this table, I was just recently a Chisago County Commissioner. But prior to that, I was a 10-year school board member of the North Branch School Board, and my last year I served as chair. I also served with Senator Wieger on the 916 Intermediate School District Board. I was on that board representing North Branch for 6 years. So I bring a passion for education, and I also believe that we really, and especially in the policy, that our end product is when the student goes out the door, that we have a student that can compete in the world in this global economy. So that's my goal, is that when these kids leave our system, that they can go wherever they choose. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, your highly qualified, motivated, and commitment is outstanding. So thank you again for sharing your talents. And when Senator Olson arrives or the next opportunity, we'll let her share her background, which is outstanding as well. We have two resolutions, and I believe Senator Stumpf also had a resolution on No Child Left Behind, and he asked, I'm told, that we not hear that. I didn't know if anyone else had a resolution on the same subject, and we can work out any concerns that you may as well. But today we'll focus on two subjects that will see a great deal of attention at the federal level and as well at the state and local level. And so we'll start off with Senate File 13 and Senate File 28, and I'll turn the gavel over to Senator Rummel.
Senator Wieger will now present Senate File 13, a resolution memorializing the President and Congress to carry through on their pledge to fund 40% of special education costs. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Senate File 13 sends a message to the President and Congress to make changes in No Child Left Behind. It was 5 years ago today, President Bush, at a school in Ohio, I believe Hamilton High School, signed No Child Left Behind, and it was passed, as you know, with a great deal of bipartisan spirit, with the hope that we could increase achievement, leave no one behind, provide more information to parents and others so that we'll also have improved results, more accountability, with a sharp eye on math and other skills, And that message has been sent down to the states to implement, and then ultimately at the school board level, where they have had to send the various reports to the Department of Education and others. You are very aware of it because no doubt you've campaigned on the issue in one form or another, as have our members in Congress. And I fully expect that Congress will make some changes as it looks at reauthorization this year. And new leadership is present in the House and Senate, and the indication is that we will have changes made. That said, it's important for us to let our policymakers know in Washington how we feel. And this resolution, and I have the special education issue here as well, which we'll talk about, but for special education, the same idea for 35 years, we've had that commitment at the federal level to have the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act in place. But when they said that would become the law of the land, 40% in funding would occur. In that case, it's been at high level at 18%, and that has cost millions, hundreds of millions of dollars at the state and local level, causing conflict and putting together school board programs. And we also, as state policymakers, haven't lived up to the expectation we had for funding special ed, or in some cases they have said that we've only had 79% reimbursement on special ed for different programs. So a lot of information at the federal level that's going to be discussed, and we're going to talk about that more on specific proposals this session. But the first item for Senate File 13 looks at the pledge of 40% of special ed costs. It asks that Congress, when it makes changes this session, that it live up to that promise, to that commitment for students. And several persons have asked to testify on each resolution. We'll take Senate File 13 before you now and ask our Commissioner of Education, Ella Segrin, to highlight concerns first on Senate File 13.
Welcome, Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Wigger, congratulations on your new chairmanship. I'm sure that you're going to do a fine job. And also want to personally welcome the new members to the Senate. And I look forward to meeting with all of you and getting to know you. Some of you I already know. And welcome. And also welcome back to the members that were reelected. It's nice to see your familiar faces, too. I did want to comment. I certainly do support the resolution that memorializes Congress to provide the 40% that was promised many, many years ago. In 1974, when 94-142 passed, a year later my son was born, and he was born with handicapped. And so we grew up with IDEA, and it certainly has made a difference in our lives and in our son's lives. And I know how it was really next iteration of civil rights for our children that have disabilities. And so it's been a very important part of my life. And I'm very proud of our educational system here in Minnesota. We had a long tradition even before 94-142 passed of supporting children with disabilities. And this just actually enhanced what we were doing already. So I thank you for the resolution, and we hope that we can continue to encourage our congressmen and our senators at the federal level to increase the appropriation. If not 40%, let's try to go for 25% anyway and move that appropriation up as we go forward in the future. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for either the senator or the commissioner? No. Senator Shostoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back, when this law was passed, I presume that the 40% had been talked about at that time. Was there a split of 40 and then a state's responsibility and a local responsibility? Do you know?
I would be assuming, sure. Senator Stumpf, now I don't know the detail there, but I'm assuming that, yes, there would be a state obligation along with the federal obligation that they would be putting these mandates in place and felt that there needed to be a federal, you know, certainly a significant federal support, but also the expectation that states needed to step up to the plate also, as Minnesota, as I said, historically has, you know, had done even before this new law came into place.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, what I was thinking about was the maintenance of effort. Mm-hmm. That was the 40% tied to that maintenance of effort, kind of like the feds would put in 40 and the state would put in so much, and or don't you know?
I don't think they had the same requirement as we have to have, that we have to maintain the effort. It doesn't seem like it over the history, because their contribution has certainly gone up and down over the years. So I don't think it almost seems unfair that we have that, although I do think it's important to have the maintenance of effort, and we have fulfilled that that obligation.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Hand.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know which one or if either of you can answer the question, but I support the resolution. I'm just curious, as you were presenting, at the time that the 40% commitment was made, was that based on the assumption that states would implement the requirements as defined by the federal government? I know that states do things differently. We do special education differently than other states, and so is there a difference in the result related to how states have elected to do their special ed programming? I've heard people talk about that we have requirements actually in excess of the federal requirements, and if we didn't, would we be, I don't know, probably not too much closer, but maybe somewhat closer to the 40% commitment, or the way we do it as compared to, say, Florida and other states where they may have a more defined cost. Do those things have any bearing on this commitment at all? Do you know?
Senator Hand, actually, no. Every state, you know, designs its support of special education. There's really not too many ways that special ed is funded. There is a weighted cost where you would take each disability and figure out a cost factor. So learning disabilities would be weighted less than if you had a student that was multiply handicapped and, you know, physically and mentally handicapped, that weighting would be. So that's one way. We do it the other way, where you have a kind of a cost-based system based on the cost of salaries and cost levels, kind of a tuition or you know, what the extra costs would be over and above a general education student. And those are really kind of the only ways that, you know, states have figured out to actually appropriate money for special ed. There's probably tweaks to each one of those systems a little bit. But beyond that, the 40% was a figure, I think, that was established or mentioned. Sometimes when I have talked with senators and congressmen on both sides of the aisle, they will kind of fudge a little bit and say, well, it really wasn't a promise. It was sort of a, we may do this in the future. And so, as you know, the history of this, no matter who's been in power, no one has really figured out how to do this. And sometimes out of frustration, I, you know, just say, look, forget everything else you're doing and all the mandates. Just, you know, fund that. If you came back and funded that, we could do so much more in so many other areas. But that hasn't been the history, and so we continue to ask to please, you know, help us with that funding.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I'm wondering if you have any sense for the likelihood that this session will be different in that regard. Have you had conversations? I know I've personally talked to Congressman Ramstead, who feels very strongly about this issue, and yet it seems like even though all of our delegation feels strongly, we haven't had the political will to have an impact. Do you have any sense of what it would take for that political will to change, or if we can empower that process in any way?
I have not had any sense of, you know, of course, everything there is going to depend on their budgets and what they appropriate and what kind of revenues they take in, just like we're going to be dealing with here. So I don't have any sense of you know, whether they are strongly supportive of that or not. I think a lot of the focus, frankly, is on your next resolution on No Child Left Behind, and a lot of the discussion has been around that. But that's why I think it's even more important to remind them also that before No Child Left Behind, there was IDEA, and you know, let's at least try to put some additional money in there as you're moving forward with other initiatives in the future, or even creating new ones.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, Commissioner Segan.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I have several other witnesses who'd like to make brief statements, so I'll ask the next group of three if you want to state their names. Elaine Keefe, Mary Ruprecht, and Kirk Schneidwin from the School Boards Association.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Elaine Keefe, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. And we're a coalition of eight organizations that advocate for special education from the parent perspective. The organizations that make up our coalition are ARC Minnesota, the PACER Center, United Cerebral Palsy, the Autism Society of Minnesota, the Brain Injury Association of Minnesota, the Epilepsy Foundation of Minnesota, the Disability Law Center, and the Upper Midwest branch of the International Dyslexia Association. I told Senator Wieger that it would probably take me my allotted 2 minutes to go through the list of organizations that make up our coalition. So I'll be very brief. We strongly support Senate File 13. Funding to educate students with disabilities has historically been a shared responsibility between the federal government, the state government, and local school districts. However, there's growing concern that too much of this cost is currently being borne by local school districts. And to remedy this, we need to put pressure on the federal government to step up and honor its original commitment to spend to fund 40% of the cost of educating students with disabilities. And our coalition will also be asking you later this session to increase the state funding for this as well. But in order to educate students with disabilities effectively so that they can become productive members of society, we really do need to have a strong partnership between the federal government, the state, and local school districts, and we feel that Senate File 13 is a good step in that direction. Thank you.
Let me go next.
Mary?
Welcome. I'm Mary Ruprecht. I'm the Director of Special Ed for the Red River Co-op in East Central Minnesota. I'm also the president of the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, MACE, and I'm here representing MACE today. I'd like to tell you a couple of things that I think are really important for you to understand. Right now, IDEA is actually being flat funded. What that means is we're actually getting less money. In fact, last year we received 18%. This year it's at 17.5%. I have a handout that I'd like to share with you that actually shows throughout the years what Minnesota has lost as a result of not receiving the 40% promise. Can I get that? What this chart does is it actually shows you what our child count was for each of the years, what the average excess cost was per pupil, and understand when they talk about the average cost, they're talking about the cost of special education that's above the cost of educating average general education students. So that's what they're talking about when they're talking about the 40%. This shows you what we would have received, what we did receive, and what we lost. And it only gives you up until 2002, 2003, because the formula changed pretty dramatically after that. And it's harder to make this kind of a determination because now it isn't just a child count. We used to just count the kids, and you got so much money for each of those students. Now they take into consideration the general population of the school district, your poverty level, and so on. So it makes it a little bit more a lot more difficult to really know what you're going to get. But the reality is that we're not only getting to the 40%, we're actually seeing reductions in that special education cost. The problem that it creates for Minnesota is that the underfunding of special education at the federal level has resulted in fewer educational options that are available for students because of the need for local districts to utilize their general education funds to cover the unfunded excess costs of special ed. Given the lack of civic commitment towards adequate funding for education, there's a downward spiral that exists that is aggravated by the interdependence between general and special education and the lack of adequate funding, especially at the federal level for special education programs and services. And as that happens, more and more of that general fund is being required for special education programs, and of course that really does create a problem for the school system in general.
Thank you. Mr. Schneiderwind?
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwind. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I want to let you know that the Minnesota School Boards Association supports the Senate resolution that is before you. Federal IDEA funding covers roughly 18%, as you well know, of the per-pupil expenditures. This leaves school districts and states with the remaining 82% of the costs. More than 30 years ago, IDEA was enacted. Congress has not yet fulfilled this promise to cover the 40%. In fact, federal appropriations are not commensurate with the adjusted funding schedule enacted in 2004 when IDEA was reauthorized. For instance, the current amount of federal funding for states is $10.6 billion, even though Congress enacted a funding schedule that authorized $16.9 billion for fiscal year 2007. Shortchanging federal funding for education affects local tax rates, school budgets, student achievement, and meeting the AYP requirements established under No Child Left Behind. Five years ago, the projected total cross subsidy for school districts was about $329 million. By 2009, it's projected for Minnesota school districts to be $633 million, just over $200 million increase. As you can imagine, this projected increase will make what is an enormous strain on local school district budgets even more strenuous. The resolution to some may be nothing more than a simple piece of paper and something that's sent to Congress, but this means a great deal to school districts, school board members, teachers, parents, and students. This resolution tells us that you understand the challenges that school districts are facing. It would certainly mean more opportunities for all students to learn, not just special needs students. Dollars, in fact, that are being spent from the general fund to pay for mandated special ed programs would be freed so that school districts could use their general fund balances for hiring qualified teachers, providing staff development for regular and special educators, and improving student achievement for all students. We appreciate you putting the resolution forward. We, in fact, are going to meet with our 10 congressmen and women at the end of January to bring this very issue before us, because this is something that is very important to our members and is something that we think needs to be addressed, if not now, in the very near future. Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions for our panel? Senators.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have heard in the past that were we to receive additional federal dollars, they could not supplant existing funds. Could you explain that for the committee? Because I think that's important that, say that, you know, the federal government was to uphold its promise, where would those dollars go?
There would absolutely have to be a change in the way that they provide the money. They would have to allow for more flexibility, because school districts are not allowed to supplant. And what that means is that you can't bill what your local efforts are providing. You'd still have to maintain your efforts. So there would have to be some flexibility. There is right now. In fact, because the money had been growing, they allowed, first of all, for us to use 20% of the difference between one year to the next as local money. And then last year, in 2004, with the new reauthorization, they allowed you to use 50%. But right now, 50% of nothing is nothing. So I think they're already recognizing that if they increase the funds, that would require some flexibility as well.
Thank you. Senator Michelle?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the panel. I think I'm going to try to address this to Mr. Schneiderwind, because you gave us the number. Thank you. $633 million. Now, I want to make sure I understand that correctly. So tell me if this is right. If the feds lived up to their 40% commitment, that would mean $633 million to Minnesota schools. Is that an accurate way to portray the numbers you've presented?
I believe so. Senator, yes.
Just nod if you guys agree to.
Well, we've actually lost over $3 billion already.
Okay, so there's two ways to look at that deficit,
if you look at the chart that I gave you, this only goes to 2003. We've actually lost almost $3 billion there, but since you have to add the other years, we've lost over $3 billion. Just our state. This is a state. Oh,
yeah.
Right. I'm sorry. That's a state figure. I'm sorry.
Do you want to state it again for me, Kirk, just to make sure I got it right?
This is a projection here, and this is a state cross-subsidy
right.
for state funding. And so it's projected to be at $633 million in the year of 2009, and I believe 5 years ago it was about $329 million for state cross-subsidy.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. It's long been my concern on this cross-subsidy issue and this maintenance of effort, and I was just reviewing your resolution, and you have addressed that on page 2, lines 7, 8, and 9, that, and I think in a rather clear way, that federal maintenance of effort should only apply to state appropriations and not to the local school district having to draw the subsidies from the general education funds. I think that is a good way of stating that, and I hope that it will get some attention. I've talked to Congressman Ramstead on numerous occasions on this subject, and you know, part of it, this may sound like a defense of the federal government, and believe me, it is not, so I just want to forewarn. When we talk about the federal government has a process that's different than what we do, is that when they authorize, they have authorizing legislation, and then they appropriate. And the authorization authorized the 40%, and we translate that into a promise, but that they're not held to that at all. That's the limits that they've set for themselves, and they can go ahead and do anything they want, which is what they've been doing. But they held out that kind of hope for us, and that seems to make some sense when they're establishing a mandate. You know, I think I would much rather that, having done this and having set those guidelines, that they actually fund that instead of looking for new ways or responding to pressure from others to go into new endeavors in education, which really isn't their constitutional responsibility in the first place. We've let them get by with too much in terms of control of education, and I would rather we kept our money here and were able to do what needs to be done with education. And, you know, this is an area that if we could get them to back off on other things and focus on this one and do it well, it would certainly be a great help to us. But, you know, I think we do characterize that authorization language as meaning more than it does, and it's one reason why I think it kind of falls on deaf ears to many of them out there in the fact that the authorization doesn't mean that it was a promise. In their view, it's not a promise. And so we can look at these numbers, but I think the pressure the pressure in the last number of years has started to push that upwards. I mean, 18% is the highest it's ever been. So it's been moving at least a tad in the right direction, even if it slipped a bit this last year. But I think it is, as much as I wonder about the worth of resolutions, in that I'm not sure how many of them have ever accomplished their intended result of all the things that we memorialize Congress to do. It's at least one vehicle communicating, and hopefully we can keep up the pressure on them so that they will do something and do it right here and let us continue to do what needs to be done for everyone. So
thank you,
Senator Wieger.
Other comments, questions? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, we have additional
witnesses. Yes, we have Mary Gilbert Doherty, Brad Lindell, and Senator Terrell Clark. Senator, you have Mr. Von Karf with you?
Good. Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm mostly here to introduce one of our school board members.
She's here to keep me quiet.
succinct. but I want to thank you so much for what you're talking about today. Part of the reason why Mr. Von Korf from our school board is here is because this is the biggest problem our district is dealing with. And I know that that's true certainly for many of your districts as well. He's got a lot of very good and concise numbers, so I'm going to let him go ahead and talk. But I just again want to thank Senator Wieger and others for working on this particular topic.
Thank you.
Senator,
welcome.
Clark and Mr. Chair, I have a handout. Has it been coming out? You should be getting two things. The first is a written testimony that will keep me brief. I've tried in the written testimony to give you some numbers that will give you a sense of the magnitude of this problem. And second of all, I thought you might be interested in our budgetary projections as to how this problem is impacting us in St. Cloud. I'm the treasurer of our board. I've been on the board for about 4 years. I'm a former teacher, but I'm now a lawyer. I took the afternoon off. I don't lobby professionally because this is a mission-critical issue for our district. If you have the chart with the colored numbers, I'll just take a couple of minutes and kind of give you an idea of how this is impacting our district. There are about 60 districts that look a lot like this. Hopkins, North St. Paul, Minneapolis, St. Paul are all in that tier of districts that have these characteristics. And if you will see that in 2000, 2003, 4, our federal funding was about $1.6 million. We got about much more than that from the state. Our total revenues were about 17.8, and our state revenues were 12.3 million. Our deficit expenditures over revenues, which translated into the cross subsidy, was about 4.9 million. Now, I've been the operating referendum chair in our district for two times before I came onto the board. We always go to the voters to just about cover our deficit in special ed. About 30, 40 districts are in that position where the operating referendum is really a device to cover the special ed deficit of the state and the federal government. And we're just about even. Now, you will see that in the last 4 years, our federal funding has been going up. Our student count is about flat. Our state funding has been going down dramatically. So, and the state funding going down has eaten up the increase in the federal funds. We are behind where we were. The 40% kills us. You make up some of it. We use our operating referendum to make up the rest. And our deficit in special ed has gone up in the last 4 years from 4.9 million to 8.1 million. That's a result of the cap on the special ed cross subsidy and a variety of devices that have come in the last 4 years. Again, this is hitting the upper tier districts, the ones that have that are above the normal funding. That funding has gone way down. We are now, our referendum is just about, is up. If we have to go back and get this deficit from the voters, it is above our referendum cap. Do you follow me?
Yes.
We never campaign for special ed when we do a referendum. Even though that's what we're doing, we're trying to keep ourselves equal with the neighboring districts. But unless something radical happens, we will not be able to make up the difference. And it's going to cost about $300 to $350 million from somewhere, maybe more, state and federal, to bring us back to where we were 4 years ago. So this is a huge problem. We'd like to get some help from the feds. If they would double the funding, it would make a tiny dent in our problem. But the real problem is the state formula. Thank you so much. I've tried to give you the other on the chart a picture. You might find your districts in there. But notice that this problem is landing on districts differently. So St. Cloud, we early on
accepted this mandate with a great will. We're proud of providing quality services, but the deficit is hitting districts differently, and that means that as we compete with surrounding districts, our voters are saying, how come you need $5 million to keep your class size at exactly the same as the neighboring school districts? And the answer is this deficit. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Lundell. I'm the Executive Director of Schools for Equity in Education, and I have a document to hand out. It's great to be in front of the committee again, from C's perspective, we are very happy to support Senator Wieger and his efforts that are embodied in Senate File 13 as he seeks to urge the federal government to make good on its promise to fund 40% of special ed costs. As our platform goes around in Schools for Equity in Education this year, of which St. Cloud is a member, we've really chosen to highlight special education as one of the things that we really want to address this year during the legislative session. And it's clearly been a major issue for districts throughout the state, and many members of Schools for Equity in Education are heavily affected and adversely so by the current framework of special ed funding streams, and it's hard to deem any of those funding streams as adequate. We are seeing greater needs crop up throughout the state in terms of special education and the wide range of issues. We are seeing more and more children in many districts needing special education services. I think that there's some issues that need to be discussed in regard to that, but I think that right now, as we look at the system moving forward, it's woefully underfunded. And having the federal government step up and do more toward its initial promise or its initial commitment or stated commitment to do what it should do in terms of meeting its needs would be greatly appreciated. This piece of legislation is not formally in our platform, but the spirit is clearly there. And C looks forward in the future throughout this session to working with Senator Wieger and others who are interested in helping kind of take apart the special education system and put it back together in a way that will make greater sense, create greater educational integrity, I think, within the special education system, and then also meet the needs of districts like St. Cloud that have very, very high needs in terms of this area.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Mary?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert, and I'm the legislative liaison for the St. Paul Public Schools. And I'll be brief and try not to repeat my colleagues. St. Paul Public Schools, just to give you an example, has an $88 million special education budget. We serve nearly 8,000 students. We serve nearly 8,000 students and probably are the large. We serve probably the largest number of non-public students as well in the state. We transport through special education transportation close to 3,000 students with 291 bus assistants, which costs us about $8.4 million. Just on the transportation alone, we lose about $1.4 million a year. To give you some example of how that correlates to what we get in funding, of that $88 million budget, we should have qualified in fiscal 06 for about $53.6 million, and we ended up, because of the proration, with $46 million in aid, $46.8 million. And our federal allowance was a whopping $400,000 more than the previous year at $9.4 million. So that was the total amount of aid that we had to contribute to that amount of money. The other thing that we know, and we can show you all of our statistics, is that there are certain categories of the special education population that are growing. Well, they're all growing faster than inflation, but some of them are growing much, much faster than inflation, particularly the autism and other health impairment category. Our expenses between fiscal 03 and 06 increased by almost 77%, and our IEP count went up by 53%. So we have some categories where the services become It's growing much faster than we can handle it. It's very, very difficult to hire enough staff. In fact, that's probably the area that we're having the most difficult problem actually meeting the most qualified teacher provisions under Leave No Child Behind would be hiring the appropriately licensed teachers under some of those special ed categories. It's very hard to bring in a teacher at an entry-level position because they're in such demand. Districts are trying to hire them away as we train them. The other thing is because it's such a it's a difficult job. It's a tough job. Between the EBD and some of those categories, sometimes we'll bring in teachers, and they'll start with us in our special education program, and then they move right in. They move out. They drop their special ed license once they've been in the district for a couple of years, and they move into our regular ed program. So as far as recruitment and retention and keeping qualified staff, it's been a problem. The other thing is that while it is true that the federal government did make this obligation, well, supposedly made the obligation to fund this, the state also has capped its special education funding when we ran into our fiscal crisis a couple of years ago. And for there are a few of us who've been around a long time, longer than we admit. I mean, I do remember the days when this committee, the Education Finance Committee, would come in, and as a matter of honor, they would pass a bill that would fund the prorations early in the session for the portion of unfunded categorical aid that was supposed to be due to the districts. The district special ed proration for fiscal 07 is scheduled at $10 million. So that is $10 million that we are supposed to receive just under the state formula that we're not going to get. So as my colleague and school board member pointed out, the state cap on special ed funding has become a problem as well. There's a few other things. Sometimes what happens is in our effort to make sure that we do the right thing for kids, there's sometimes some unintended consequences. When the state adopted the birth to three mandate, what happened is the school districts ended up assuming more of the costs of providing some of the health and health-related services to those children, and some of the health plans actually put exclusions in their contracts that didn't cover some of the PT and OT and speech language and some of the other things that would have normally been picked up for by the health plan. So what happens, too, is that we've actually shifted some of the costs, you know, from some of the other variety of payers over to the school districts, which then has been further compounded by this kind of lack of effort between the federal and state government to fund these programs. And so what's happened, you know, is we end up kind of holding the bag. And what we want to assure and avoid is that we have, and it's getting there, the tension between the regular ed programs and the special ed programs, because the different folks are beginning to kind of wonder, why are our class sizes so big? And it's, you know, what is going on with your budget? And I think that would be, frankly, a really disservice, you know, to our kids in our community. And I think it's something we can work hard together to avoid.
Thank you. Are there comments and questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On one page of the handout of costs with a number of districts, I'm really amazed at the high percentage from St. Cloud as well as others, the percentage of students in special ed. Am I reading that column wrong?
We've done a study of why that is. And we hired outside people. And frankly, one of the things you could do for districts is to provide a small amount of funding to encourage that. The student count percentage is a ratio of public education students versus all students. In other words, we serve all special ed students in the district, whether they're public or private. We have about the highest non-public school count in a percentage in the state. There's maybe a couple others higher because we have a long tradition of Catholic parochial and now other parochial schools. So in a district that has a and people don't generally send their special ed kids to the private schools. So that dramatically increases our percentage. If we adjust for that, then we're down lower. The second thing is, if you look at districts that have hospitals, we have the children's home that serves statewide. We get people from all over the state. Last year, the legislature passed a change that said that those students, even though they come from other places in the state, are now our district's responsibility. And so you find people moving to St. Cloud because they have a profoundly disabled child, they want to be close to a hospital. This is happening in other districts as well. The other thing that drives this is limited English proficiency. Poverty is highly correlated. And there are some things that we can do and we are really working to do to reduce this number, but that basically is our story. If you were to compare us to districts and adjust for non-public school count, you know, we would be much closer.
Madam Chair, I apologize that I missed the commissioner's presentation, but in terms of percentage of special ed students, I think we've been traditionally a bit higher than other states. Am I in error on that, or how do we compare with other states in terms of our percentage of our student population that is labeled or identified as special needing special ed services?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I don't have the comparison of other states' figures. I think we are fairly close to what other state averages are. What I think is very telling is that when I was on our school board in Bloomington, the statewide average was more like 8 to 10%, and that has been creeping up over the years, you know, so now that the statewide average overall, while St. Cloud and how the gentleman articulated the reasons why their percentages are higher than the statewide average, statewide average is about 12% now. So it has been creeping up, and it is for some of the reasons that Mary Gilbert mentioned. You know, we just have a lot of more complex students than we've ever had before in autism, for example, in the EBD area. We're doing certainly a lot better job with our LD, our learning disabled children, but we're learning a lot more now about autism.
There are things that we know to do to reduce this number, and they involve early intervention. And we are working very hard on that in our district, but, of course, there's no... it involves a seat change, and it involves, you know, three or four people come into the community with profoundly disabled children. They belong to us, and that blows a hole in our budget. But another policy initiative you might want to consider is putting some money into the things we know how to do to catch kids earlier and intervene earlier.
Madam Chair, I appreciate it. I didn't mean to be pointing a finger specifically at St. Cloud, but it's been my sense that this number has been growing in our state, and whether we've expanded the scope or there are just more children that are needing this, or just what's driving it is...
Madam Chair, just another additional fact to share with you, too. As we're working with our preschool population, the federal government just recently, we had about a year-long discussion with the federal government about our child count in the birth to three and in our preschool programs. And really, basically, they have told us that we have to have a wider door, if you will, for even including children as potentially in need of services for special ed, and those would be children that might come from a home where there's chemical dependency. It might be a child that just is at risk of, you know, maybe being in a home that has abusive parents. The child may be perfectly normal and not have any problems, but we have to at least seek out when there's report of those children of seeking out and providing them potential services. Now, that doesn't mean we have to provide them or will if they don't need them. But, again, you have all this other bureaucratic infrastructure that has to be created to seek out, you know, these children and make sure that they do or they don't need services even. So, and that has come, again, from the federal. There have been statements made, too, that our state has gone way beyond the federal mandates. And a few years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago, when I was still in the legislature, we did have a very comprehensive examination of our special education state laws and rules compared to the federal. And we had, you know, some that were beyond. But as the last reauthorization of IDEA happened, for the most part, the rules and regulations became very much more closely aligned with the new IDEA. Now, that was the last one. And we may have a few things that are beyond the federal, but I would say for the most part now, either the federal government has copied Minnesota or the federal government has caught up with Minnesota's rules and mandates and state things. But I don't think we're extraordinarily out of line anymore with what the federal government demands. But, you know, there's still always an opportunity to look at those issues.
Madam Chair, if I could add to this as well, there's a lot of worms here, and I'll open another can. But I guess the thing is the one thing, and I think Mr. Van Korf and Commissioner Seeger have mentioned too, there's a real linkage between what happens in general ed and what happens in special ed in terms of ability to provide early intervention, class size, some of those other issues. And I think what we can do probably as we look forward, and of course I'll advertise for PS Minnesota wherever I can, if we look for some kind of comprehensive reforms that are going to look at what happens in those early grades and to get those services to kids before they're in need of special ed services, I think that that's something that we need to work on in conjunction with what we're working on here.
Senator Hahn, did you have a question before?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. And Mr. Van Korf, I just, in looking at your spreadsheet, and I was trying to understand, you testified that your enrollment was flat.
Our special ed enrollment is flat. Our general enrollment is going down, although we reversed it last year. You fund special ed based on regular student count. And so there are a bunch of districts fall into that category. We're talking a little bit about the death spiral here, if you know what that is, that the financial pressures in an urban district with increasing poverty rates start to drive kids with choices out. We make money on them, we lose money on the others. They go to surrounding school districts where the financial pressures aren't as great, and it becomes a vicious cycle.
And
Senator Stump.
I know what I was going to say. Madam Chair, and I'm not sure maybe who would want to answer this, but the discussion was about, maybe Commissioner Seegren, I guess, when they brought it up. The early childhood special education, where does Minnesota's standard compare to some other states? Is that a ruling that just came down that Minnesota needs to lower the standard for children getting into or getting some of the services? Not the standard, but the age?
No, Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf, we've had a 0-3 mandate for many years in Minnesota, and a number of years ago, the federal government created an opportunity for districts. It was called Part H. It's now called Part C, for states to participate in supporting children that were preschool children, ages 3 to 5. And we always have had a birth mandate. But recently, with even the Part C legislation, they have been telling us that their interpretation of the federal law for the Part C is that in looking at the child count, we need to expand or open the door more to potential at-risk children. Our definition had always been more narrowly defined in that it would be obviously a child born with a disability or could be easily identified. So we always linked it back to Part B, which is our special education requirements for entering into special education. So now they're saying, well, it's not enough, and part of IDEA also was including, they mentioned children of parents that were chemically dependent. It was just the potential for, being at risk for needing special ed. So that's where it's kind of, made up. We kind of argued back and forth that We thought we had a pretty rigorous child count system and child count finding. And even though they assured us that they weren't comparing percentages of, you know, how many of our percentage of students were in early education and special ed, they still looked at our percentage and said, well, but it's still kind of too low. We'd like you to get it up a percentage or two. And so you just have this subtle pressure all the time to expand it. And we tried very rigorously for over a year to make our case. And ultimately, they said, you know, you do this, or we're going to start coming down hard on you.
So, Madam Chair and Commissioner, so then do we need some legislation that would change the definition or?
Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf, yes, and I think you'll probably see some clarification of that.
In the governor's budget?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead with him first.
Senator Olsen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Mr. Lundell, I used to be on C, so it's hard calling him Mr., but you kind of alluded to with PS Minnesota, there is some talk of changing the formula in Minnesota, but some of the models that I've seen, like PS, I don't quite see how education or special ed fits into that model. Could you address that a little bit?
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, it's hard for me to call you Senator, I guess. But I'll get used to it. I would say that with special ed, what we're trying to do in PS Minnesota is go back to the model that was in place prior to fiscal 97, I believe, in which we want to go back to reimbursing on a current year basis the special ed costs and reimbursing them at a much higher level, and including benefits as well as simply salary in the calculation of what the reimbursement for districts would be. There simply does need, and I think that St. Cloud here does show as a prime example, that may not be enough. We may need to look at other ways to look at districts with extremely high needs and to find ways to intervene in those districts. And I think what Mr. Van Korf has outlined as the challenges in St. Cloud's instance is really something that does need to be looked at. And I think you'll see that probably not only in St. Cloud, but in other districts that share similar situations with either private schools or with charter schools or whatever it might be. So.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This past December, Senator Bonhoeff and I, along with a couple of our new freshman representatives, spent a Sunday afternoon with a group of folks, parents and some of their children, and with the Dyslexia Association. And it was a fascinating time because they had a presentation for us of some research-based methods that were changing. That really hold some potential for reducing the reliance on special ed, of lowering that burden. And I hope that our committee can have a look and a discussion on this, because I think we do have some challenges here. And if anything that we could do, because we've got a double whammy, we both have the seeming lack of commitment that you are pointing out, both at the federal and state level, in the terms of the adequacy of funding, but you have the counter pressure of the increasing numbers that are coming on board. And if anything that we could do that could prevent some of that, I think it's in the best interest of not only the children that are involved, but our system as a whole.
Senator Olson, our district's legislative package includes best practices help. I think districts desperately need best practices help, and not just more money. We desperately need more money, but some work with us to implement best practices to make sure that there's integrity in the spending.
Thank you. I think we've spent a lot of time on this. We have another motion, and I believe there's a possibility of an amendment.
Madam Chair, not from me for an amendment on this one.
Okay.
I thank the witnesses and am prepared to make a motion that Senate File 13 be recommended to pass, but would yield if there's any further discussion or persons in the audience.
Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair, there is another.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm with EdWatch. Thank you, Senator Weiger and Madam Chair, for this opportunity. I'm not going to speak very long, but I just wanted to raise a couple of issues, both about the resolution and about some of the discussion that has gone on. When special ed was first passed, when IDEA was first passed, the goal of it was to provide a free, appropriate public education for children that had physical, knowable disabilities, deafness, blindness, cerebral palsy, orthopedic problems. It was not until 1991 that they added learning disabilities and what they call other health impairments, which mostly means attention deficit disorder as well as the EBD, emotional behavioral disorder. And I just wanted to point out that the President's Commission on Special Education report that came out in 2003 prior to the last reauthorization stated very clearly that 90% of the students that are in special ed are in what are called the high incidence categories of specific learning disability, emotional behavioral disorder, and other health impairments, which are mostly the emotional and mental health types of things. They said that 90% of those students, which are 90% of the total, have problems with reading. And that is really, really important to work on. The other thing they said in that report is that all of these high incidence disabilities are very difficult to recognize because the criteria are very vague and very subjective. And so part of the problem with the increase in special education costs is the over-identification of children with these high incidence disabilities. And there was another report that came out about the same time from the National Academy of Sciences that said that poor and minority, specifically African-American students, are 50% more likely than white students to be labeled as either mentally retarded or emotionally behaviorally disturbed. And Minnesota, several years ago, had the dubious distinction of leading the nation in the over-identification of minority students for special education. So what I would say, what I would really recommend is that as you consider this process, that you really focus, A, on reading, B, focus on specifying and making more concrete the diagnostic criteria, especially for emotional behavioral disturbance, which I've testified on several occasions before, are outrageously vague. The criteria are things like abnormal behavior under normal circumstances. You know, it's just, they're just horribly vague. And I can give you, I can provide a list of those for you. Regarding autism, I would just recommend and plead with you to follow through on the very good legislation that you passed. We've banned mercury thermometers in this state. We've banned mercury emissions, and that was legislation that passed last session. But we are still not banning the direct injection of mercury-containing vaccines into the developing nervous systems of infants and toddlers, and with especially the flu vaccine, which makes absolutely no logical sense. So when you're concerned about special ed and autism, please remember mercury in vaccines. And then the final thing for that Commissioner Segrin recommended or discussed about the 0 to 3, the vagueness of the at-risk category is especially outrageous because children, you know, infants don't communicate very well. So it's very hard to accurately identify. And through the early childhood socio-emotional screening that the state does as part of the kindergarten readiness that is being done, in our belief, without statutory authority, and basically deciding that every child that is entering kindergarten is potentially a child with a disability is something that needs to be dealt with.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the helpful insights from the witnesses, your thoughtful discussion. In addition to the resolution, it's provided an excellent springboard for additional deliberation on proposals to come during the upcoming session. That said, I would move that Senate File 13 be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now we have another Senate file, number 28, Senator
yes.
Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did refer to Senate File 28 earlier in the introductory remarks on No Child Left Behind. I did mention that Senator Stumpf has a bill introduced as well, and I believe, Senator Stumpf, it's not your intent to pursue that other than possibly amending or changing, but we'll have this before us today. I do have an author's amendment, and for new members, an author's amendment initially, to put the bill in the form you'd like. As a courtesy, you offer it, and it's accepted just as that would be for you. So I would move the A1 amendment, and as that is being distributed, it basically puts in a resolve that there be sufficient funding for implementation of the mandates as well. And it's in the discussion for background, we refer to insufficient funds, and this makes it clear in the resolve clause as well. I think it's still being distributed, but that's the spirit of the A1 amendment. And we yield for any questions, if there would be, on the amendment. Then, Madam Chair, I think we could vote on that.
Pardon?
I think we could vote then on the A1 amendment.
Those who are in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Oops, we have a discussion here.
I guess I just was glancing at the resolution itself, and the resolution that you have before you is not a resolution to
withdraw,
repeal. But it's a resolution to change. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, yes, would seek to fix it. And part of it is pragmatic. The leaders in Congress, and we have new leaders now, they've indicated that it's their intent to fix, not to repeal. I know there's been discussion in the past that there should be a repeal. I know there's been litigation as well, challenging the authority, but I would say the direction is to try to fix No Child Left Behind. And I believe, too, in 2005, we may have had a unanimous Senate position that the Congress be urged to not expand NCLB to the high schools. And maybe we would talk about that, but it's in the context of trying to fix the No Child Left Behind Act as they seek its reauthorization in year 5.
Okay. So I just wanted to be clear on
yes.
what we're doing.
So you still could seek the repealer route if that's your intent. But this one does not do it. And Madam Chair, if I could, there are a few witnesses, and I'd like to call on Commissioner Segrin and other witnesses that have signed up, Grace Schwab and Jan Alswager. I believe they're here, if they could join us as well, to be followed by a couple of other witnesses.
Good afternoon again, Madam Chair.
Welcome again.
Madam Chair, in your packets, there is a synopsis of the No Child Left Behind waiver requests. I know that people are always interested in what the department has been doing in regard to asking for more flexibility for No Child Left Behind. So I'll go through that in a minute. My statement to you, and I don't think anyone around this table would disagree, and that the philosophy behind No Child Left Behind is very important, and I don't think anybody disagrees that we should be looking at all students in all subgroups and making sure that everyone has the opportunity to achieve to their fullest potential. And that over the years, while Minnesota has done an extraordinary job of educating their children, we've also been able to use our averages to hide some of the wide achievement gaps that actually exist in some of our minority and immigrant communities, and that's not acceptable. And No Child Left Behind has really caused our school districts to look very strategically at how we can educate those students in a more effective way. And indeed, I think we are seeing improvement. Slow, but surely we are seeing improvement in many of our subgroups. Is it fast enough? No, it is not. And we're continuing to work on that as a department, looking at school improvement strategies and working very aggressively to support our students. Having said that, I do want to just go very quickly through some of the flexibility that we have received. We have created an index point system that actually recognizes if you are a 3, 4, or 5-star school, you'll get additional index points. If you're a 2-star, you'll get a half a point, and it accumulates and actually helps soften whether you are an AYP or not. So it's a way of keeping you out of AYP. We have confidence intervals, and I was chuckling here when you're looking at your little descriptor there. It says conference internals. In the second line, that should be confidence intervals. So there was a little typo there. But this is, again, it's sort of like when you're doing polling and there are, plus or minuses on either side of a polling result that says, whether it's just statistically significant. This is the same kind of a concept. We have, and those were approved, the AYP consideration for small schools. We don't have to count cell sizes that have less than 20 because they become statistically hard to validate. We also have the exclusion of specialty schools such as special education cooperatives and care and treatment facilities. These students may test if appropriate, and the results will be reported, but there isn't AYP results are not counted against them. We have requested cell size subgroup differentials for our ELL and our special education subgroups, and were approved, but now the federal government is backing down on that and saying in the future they may want us to have a consistent cell size. So we're, unfortunately maybe going backwards on that, but you never know with this new Congress. We have averaging across 3 years for AYP. That kind of evens out the spikes status system, if you will, so that 1 year you may have a very bright group of students in a subgroup, and the next year maybe not so bright, and the next year, another. So you have these spikes. Well, what we're doing is saying we're going to go back. If you didn't make AYP this year, you go back and you look at the year before, and you average those. And you can go back 3 years to do an average, and that smooths out the spikes in the system, and that was approved. We have the expansion of the LEP subgroup, just like we did with the special education. We have tried. We're still working on an alternative assessment for that 2% of the special education population beyond that 1% that are the most significantly cognitively disabled, to create an alternative assessment for those students that would be aligned to our standards. It's a very technical and very complex testing process. We keep waiting for more direction from the federal government. We get examples of some states that you should look at to do this, and then, you know, the next week it's another state. So we are still working on that, you know, to provide that total 3% flexibility. The same cell size, same subject. This was something where you'd have at least 2 years that before you would, you know, be charged with not making AYP in the same subject. We tried to request that. That was not approved. We also have the putting the tutoring before choice. They have signaled to states that they can go ahead and do that. For our state, we found that because we've already had open enrollment and choice for so many years, that it really didn't make much of an impact. We didn't see much movement. And so we can do tutoring if we want to first. And they're allowing some district or some states to do that. Again, multi-year averaging for proficiency. I've already illustrated that, and that's been approved. We had the expanded special education subgroup for AYP approved. We also tried to develop a reading test for ELL students, English language learners. It was not approved because they didn't feel like it was aligned closely enough with our standards. But in the meantime, the federal government has, or the U.S. Department of Education has created a task force that states are participating in. We are one of them, to look at alternative assessments for ELL students. And we are in process of working with them on developing a ELL math test that would have the same high achievement standards in each grade level, but it wouldn't have so much verbiage, so many word problems, if you will, because that's very difficult if you're a new student learning a new language and then trying to read a word problem and do the math. So if they can demonstrate the math skill behind that word problem, that's what we want to get at. And so we're working with them, and we hope that we're going to have that approval. And then we've also we've got the new to the country exemption, and you have a 1 year exemption from testing if you have never been in this country before, and that has been approved. Currently, we are working on two other things. I mentioned the ELL, so that's one of them, and then also a value added or growth model. We were in process of developing that, and then when we repealed the profile of learning and had to establish new academic standards and the tests for those academic standards, we had to kind of start over again. So we had, and then the Fed said, you can't go into any kind of a proposed value-added model unless you have 2 years of test data. So we've had to wait now. We'll have 2 years of test data, and we are also working with a stakeholders group that is required by No Child Left Behind. It's been an ongoing stakeholders group that we've had for 5 years. And we are going to be working with them. It represents many of the organizations all around the state, educational organizations, business, et cetera, everyone. And we will be talking about what does our value-added or growth model want to look like for Minnesota, what would be appropriate. And we didn't want to get too far ahead of the feds and then have the feds come back and tell us, nope, can't do that. And we've put a lot of work into something. It's very complex. And so we wanted to be cautious as we went forward with it. But I want to assure you we are going to be developing that. It will probably take a couple of years because it's a complex thing to develop, as developing a new test is. But we have been very aggressive, and I want to assure you that we are trying to provide flexibility while still supporting the ideal behind No Child Left Behind that we all want to have for our students.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there questions for the Commissioner? excuse me, Senator Bonhoeff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, the thing that I have the most concern about is the very definition of adequate yearly progress. And so really the essence of No Child Left Behind, because of that definition, seems flawed or contradictory. And, you know, the idea that adequate yearly progress is talking about cells rather than children really bothers me, and it bothers our districts, because we aren't actually looking at, did, you know, this student move, you know, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. We're looking at, did students of the same socioeconomic status, the same race, the same, you know, did those types. And we all know that none of us learn like that. We can't be generalized like that. And so I have trouble looking at this, you know, these fixes without really, you know, going back to that original premise, that without actually having this No Child Left Behind, which I do support the intent behind it, but without addressing adequate yearly progress of each and every student, I'm really at a loss for how to support it.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, that certainly has been a discussion that's been ongoing, whether to have a summative or a formative type of assessment system. And early on, the federal government said it must be a summative. And testing the system, if you will, checking with the system, checking in with the system to see how the system was doing overall for individual groups of children. And certainly what we're trying to do with a value-added or growth model is also add additional information for this district, for the parents, for the child, and for the public, for them to understand that and build into. And we actually have some of that built in, too, to give credit for districts in making progress over time for children. And the federal government, and I agree with this, we don't want to just look at a growth system that says, all right, if you're 2 years behind and you grow a year, we're going to give you, you know, you're going to say that's okay. Because we have to grow 130% if eventually that child is going to have to catch up. So as you do a growth or a value added, you want to make sure that we are creating enough of a stretch for students so that we're not just patting ourselves on the back and saying, oh, yeah, they're doing fine. They grew a year. But, yes, I think that's been a concern and how to grapple with that and how to make it a fair system, because I would want to know, you know, if I have a typical child, are they maintaining their educational attainment from year to year? And remember, too, adequate yearly progress is a basic proficiency. It's a core, strong proficiency. And for us as the state of Minnesota, I will say very proudly that the people that were around the table in the task force of No Child Left Behind when we originally set our AYP standard did not game the system like many states did and set a low score and say, you know, we're going to tell the public that, oh, our kids are proficient. We set a rigorous yet fair proficiency level that we expected that would say to every parent, our kids have enough knowledge after being in third grade that they'll be able to go on to fourth grade and continue to progress and have a proficiency level. Can we do more? Should they do more? Absolutely. And, of course, the governor is really talking to us about the importance of more rigor. Higher levels of expectation, particularly in the areas of science, technology, engineering, and math. So we have to do more. We can do more. But we also cannot leave some subgroups of children behind and ignore them. So we have to, you know, look strategically at how we can help them. And I have never said, and I hope I never hear any of you say this, that our teachers or our schools are failing because they did not make AYP. We have kids and systems that have students that are working really hard and trying to do their best, and our schools are going to do that and continue to do that. So don't let me ever hear any of you say that. The media sometimes says that, but we don't want to say that. We are working hard, and we should be proud of our educational system. And we can make No Child Left Behind a Minnesota model. And we can do what we need to do to improve achievement and close that achievement gap.
One more question, Madam Chair. Commissioner, what do you think about, I believe it's Idaho, who actually negotiated with the federal government to substitute the NWEA test in some form to replace the kind of adequate yearly progress test that we do?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, they tried negotiating. But that was not approved.
Oh, I heard it was approved, no. Madam Chair. Oh, thank you. Okay.
No, the federal government is still insistent that an out-of-levels test is not where they want to go. But now they are working on, you know, a value added as sort of a safe harbor addition to your status or summative test.
Thank you.
Senator Salzman?
Madam Chair, thank you. One thing I think that the public perceives TESS is that it's a snapshot of where children are today. And if we're going to talk about student achievement, we have to have tests that are going to be a roadmap to where we want to take them. And unfortunately, so many of the tests that we see now are coming back 6 months later. We're having children take a test in March or April, and I'm waiting for this score, and I'm waiting for this score. And by the time our parents receive them, we're in a different grade level, different teachers. So I hope that as you look at evaluations, that we will consider that and urge on the federal level that they accept those kind of tests, because it shouldn't just... I guess to me, accountability is extremely important, because accountability is there to show student achievement. It's not just to look at our schools, but it's also to look at where are each individual child, where is that child going. So I really will support anything you can do in that area as we develop testing.
Madam Chair and Senator Salzman, we are working very aggressively with our testing vendors, too, in that same area. And one of the things that is a dilemma for Minnesota that makes it a little bit harder for the test results to be returned in a more timely fashion. We also require, besides our true-false multiple-choice questions, constructive responses. And that takes more time to score, because it takes individual cadres of teachers to read, you know, the essays, if you will, or the answers that are written. Answers. And we've asked the educational folks, the teachers, et cetera, would you want to give up the constructive response in order to get your results back? And we keep hearing back, no, we really like the constructive response. So we've also explored, could we get the multiple choice back and then have the other come back earlier? So there are a lot of things that, you know, we can try to do. Our testing vendors are getting more sophisticated at turning things around more quickly. We're getting more sophisticated in contracting and putting specificity in with some of those things. But yes, it is. And I want to assure you, we are getting test results back now earlier in the middle of the summer for our schools, so that they can make decisions and inform parents if indeed they are not making EYP. So they are getting it back earlier. Is it soon enough? Probably not. But every state is facing sort of that same issue. If they have a more comprehensive assessment process like we have, there are just no easy answers. One problem kind of leads to other, you know, issues. But we are working very aggressively on that, I want to assure you.
Are there any other questions? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are the waivers, it seems like when we first started with NCLB a couple years ago, or a few years ago, that the way the law was set up was that individual states could request for a waiver, and then those waivers that were granted were really kind of not uniform. One state would get a waiver, another state would ask for the same thing, and they couldn't get it. Has there been anything more consistent about the waivers across the states? And are there waivers that other states have gotten that we've been seeking and haven't gotten?
Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf, yes, that was a problem at the beginning of No Child Left Behind. It made all of us really mad, because we would find out that, you know, another state got something that we didn't get, or that, you know, we didn't even know about even the concept that, oh, this was something we could have explored. So after, I think when Secretary Spellings came into office, she actually then required the publication of all waivers that all states were getting, so we could all start examining each other's potential ideas. And so sometimes when we or another state gets a waiver or we don't, or we get one and they don't, it may also, though, be based on our assessment system. Some states already had testing 3 through 8th grade. We didn't in the early years. So sometimes a state requested a waiver and they got it because they already had all the grades being tested. We couldn't because of some other kind of technical issue that, you know, caused us to say, no, not for the time, you know, not for right now, but once you get tests, all tests in place, you can go back and ask for the waiver again. So sometimes it looks like, oh, they've been unfair, but when you start digging down into maybe some of the technical stuff, especially around testing validation or something, you dig into it and you think, oh, okay, I can understand the rationale. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes I still can't. But we are all working, and as chief state school officers, we talk frequently and have lots of meetings about, you know, how we're going to, you know, continue to push the fairness and consistency for those waivers. It's been maddening to many of us.
Thank you.
Thank you. I am looking at the clock. It's moving up toward 5 o'clock, and we have a number of witnesses. So I think if we can move through this a little bit more quickly, it will be to the benefit of everyone here. So our next person is, I believe it's Grace Schwab.
Yes, Madam
Grace,
Chairman.
Welcome.
Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I'll make my presentation really briefly. I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee today. My board of directors once a year has an opportunity to go out and talk to our federal delegation. That happens the end of this month, and we're excited to see Senator Wieger's resolution as a way of sharing how our state feels about No Child Left Behind. There are really 5 areas of concern we're interested in. The first and foremost is the sanctions. Of the school districts on AYP today, half of them were on for their first time. So before I even start, I want to tell you that the vast majority of school districts in AYP only failed in one indicator. So it's good news for our school districts across the area. What we're looking at between now and 2014 is a ratcheting up of the goals for No Child Left Behind, where in 2014, 100% of our students will be asked to meet that goal. We have concerns about our sanctions. Basically, right now, if a school district receives a sanction, it is for the entire school. We think it much better to be allowed for the same group and the same indicator, really helping those people that the tests have shown have had issues in that issue area. We also think that if children are allowed a transferring school option, that there be some things considered when they're transferring, such as class size in the affected school, overcrowding, the need for mobile classrooms or construction, or significant cost outlays, travel burdens, time, safety, and high pupil cost to do that. Our second issue area we're concerned about is subgroups. The current law allows a student to be counted in multiple subgroups across, and we really support that a student really equal one student. So partial representation in the different subgroups to equal one, not such a wild idea. Also, the participation rates. We're asking them as a national organization to be lowered from 90 to 95% instead of the present 95%, anywhere in that 90 to 95 range, for 2 basic reasons. Some of our children we deal with on a daily basis have medical conditions that let them be a member of the school district, yet they are not part of the school district, or they have unusual patterns of attendance or chronically truant. Those high participation rates really do hurt some of our districts. We also think we should move from just a cut score, or sort of a snapshot of what a student's record looks like, to really a growth model, and Commissioner Segrin referred to that as being a priority. We really think that gives you a better feeling for how a child moves throughout the year. And in May 2006, the Department of Ed did approve the use of growth models in AYP in North Carolina and Tennessee under a 1-year pilot project. So at least it gives us a hint that the federal government's interested in doing that. Our third area of concern is special education. Here we really feel the IEP team for the child should be determined whether an alternate assessment are appropriate for that individualized student. Present law only allows 1% of special needs students to be exempted, when in fact educators and researchers agree about 3% of special ed students are unable to take a regular standardized assessment. Our fourth area of concern is supplemental service providers. Here we're worried in the quality and effectiveness of supplemental service providers and really want to see an enforcement in quality of these people so parents are never into the dark about what their tutoring services are available to our children. We're also worried about alignment with sanctions with the needs. This goes again saying that supplemental service providers come first, which the commissioner referred to. Tutoring is offered first, and then school choice offered second. It just seems to be a logical order in which to proceed. And lastly, we're worried about future costs, and especially in the legislative auditor's report in March 2004. It said 80% of Minnesota elementary schools would not be able to make AYP by 2014 under a study they did. And the costs associated with not belonging to Title I, which in 2004 was $214 million that we'd lose if we didn't participate. Those are true concerns we need to face as we go forward, and we appreciate Senator Wieger's resolution and guidance. In the end, I want to thank the committee for coming before them and really think that if Congress doesn't address these needs, both the credibility of NCLB and public confidence in our public schools will erode. Thank you.
Are there questions for Ms. Schwab? Thank you. Do we have Jan Alsweger? Thank you, Jan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jan Alsweger, Education Minnesota. And Education Minnesota is an organization of 70,000 teachers and education support professionals and higher education faculty members across the state. We are affiliated because this is the first time in front of many of you. We are affiliated with the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. And this issue is very important to both of those national organizations as well. You know that the No Child Left Behind Act is also the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. You hear ESEA and NCLB, and basically they are the same thing. When they're reauthorized in 2007, we agree with Senator Wieger that there should be some major changes. We agree that the goals of No Child Left Behind are good ones, that we are not afraid of accountability, and that we want improvement for our students. The real issue, though, is that the goals, while they are very good goals, and we support them, the way that No Child Left Behind implements the mechanisms and the details actually don't accomplish the goals and undermine the success of students. So there are four major problems. I'm going to keep these fairly brief. If you have questions, I'll be happy to answer questions. First of all, we think that there are unattainable goals, and everyone has mentioned that in Minnesota and virtually every other state, so I hope Congress will finally listen. And the auditor's report, as Ms. Schwab said, clearly indicates that Minnesota could never be successful. The second problem is fixed targets. Because the progress in a given year is linked to a fixed target, such as third graders, and if those third graders do not make AYP, and if that school then targets those third graders and really works on those third graders, it really doesn't make any difference what happens, because the next year's third graders are ones that are tested. I had a legislator once made a very wise analogy. He said, when he first heard about this, he said, are you telling me that if I went to a medical practice and all the doctors were working to decrease the cholesterol and the heart disease in 40-year-old white males, and that they gave them a specific plan on what they were to do to improve their exercise and their eating habits and medication, that after a year of going through that process, he said, are you telling me that you wouldn't examine those same 40-year-old white males? That you would find the 39-year-old males from last year and see how they're doing? That's exactly what we're doing with our third graders or with any other subgroup, whether it's the age, the subject, or with the subcategory. And it isn't exactly common sense or logical to do anything like that. With the disaggregation that I just referred to, the reporting of the test results, allows these students to be monitored who have been ignored, and we need to focus on those subgroups. There's no doubt about that. But if a subgroup fails to meet one goal, the entire school fails. The No Child Left Behind gives, I'll say it the opportunity sarcastically, 37 different ways to fail. And you might hear that, you know, we're not failing schools and so on, but, you know, just read the paper after the test scores come out and the AYP results come out. There isn't a school out there that would say that they didn't feel like they failed. And they know that they worked very hard. And when parents read it, they start judging. And that's just common sense. It's just a natural attitude that people do, but that's how it feels. The fourth area is funding. Congress knew that the goals of No Child Left Behind were going to require some additional funding. And so the largest portion of the funding for No Child Left Behind is Title I. And the authorization for Title I funding in 2006 for Minnesota for the entire country, is $22.75 billion. $22.75. Now, that was authorized, and you probably know how Congress works. A figure is authorized, and then a figure is actually committed. The amount that Bush requested was only $13.3 billion, so that's significantly short. Minnesota will receive an estimated $111.5 million in Title I funding in 2006, far below the $190 million that was authorized by Congress. So you add that on to the discussion that you just had with special ed, and now we have another cross-subsidy that is happening from our regular education program to fund the mandates and the testing requirements for No Child Left Behind. I won't go into our recommendations, but we do have four in the areas of adequate yearly progress, the highly qualified issue, school improvement, and funding. Education Minnesota has written a document called No Child Left Behind. I think I would hope every one of you have the opportunity to read it. If you have any questions, please let me know. If you've got some parents that would like to read and find out more about it, we'd be happy to give you some copies, and they will be distributed later. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for our witness, Senator?
Thank you. Madam Chair, I have a question for Ms. Alschweiger and Ms. Schwab. It's interesting, you know, I took a whole page of notes here, and these are all concerns over No Child Left Behind. And is it true to say that, you know, when this idea first came out, I believe it was shortly after 9/11 occurred that it was just, you know, quickly authorized at the congressional level, and there was not a lot of congressional discussion about this federal law. And we've been struggling with it ever since. And it seems to be an interesting way to describe it about the doctors. You know, I mean, sometimes I think taking a step away really helps people understand a little bit better what's happening in our school districts. And I would wonder if what you would have to say about the illustration. I've been told quite a bit having to do with doctors, but it's the same thing as dentists. Mm-hmm. If dentists are required to instruct their patients and fill the cavities and do the patient education and supply them with the tools, and then you have the patient leave, and then if the patient comes back with cavities next year, the doctor would be penalized. Would you say that also accurately reflects how No Child Left Behind treats schools?
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson-Ropes, I've heard of our teacher members have talked about that over and over again, and they see a similar analogy. And they're only asking for something that's fair. They're not afraid to be held accountable. They want the resources to be able to do the job. They want people to understand that students have differences. We need to figure out how best to meet the needs of those kids so that they are successful. But, yeah, in answer to your question, yes, many of our members would feel the same way.
And also, as I mentioned before, I was the state president of Minnesota PTA, and I did have the pleasure of working with the commissioner on the stakeholders group for a couple of years. But National PTA, actually, was
involved in writing a couple paragraphs of Do Chow Left Behind, and that's the only two paragraphs they really like in the entire bill. But it has to do with parent involvement, because we know when parent involvement happens at school, student achievement increases. But they, too, and many organizations that support our schools, do agree with your organizations that we support the goals, we want the accountability, we want the rigor. The governor's talking about more attention to science and math. We all support those goals. It's the vehicle that is in question here. And so is it the position of your organizations that you want to see this vehicle continue, even with adaptations? Because we've gotten a whole list of all the waivers. I mean, we've been doing nothing but retooling this program since it began, and states have been struggling along, I think, very lumpily.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, we want to continue the work to hold high goals for our students, to make students successful, and if this is the vehicle that does it, that is okay. But the vehicle needs to go back to the factory and be redone, reworked. And so I'm only hesitant because I want to make sure that that vehicle is a vehicle that works for kids and gets right. them to their destination.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions? We have Ms. Bernadine from the Minneapolis Public Schools joining us. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Bernadia Johnson, and I'm the new Chief Academic Officer for the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I've been on the job about 3 months now, so I know what it feels like to be a new member to this particular committee. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity today to talk to you about the reauthorization of the No Child Left Behind statute. First of all, let me state from the onset that Minneapolis Schools and our National Association, the Council of Great City Schools, supported the enactment and the overarching intent of No Child Left Behind Act to close the achievement gap while raising achievement for all students. Our mission is to continue to ensure that all students learn. In addition, we welcome the efforts to develop a strong public accountability system. Within the context of support for the intent of NCLB, let me briefly state how we think NCLB could be improved in its upcoming reauthorization. We believe that Congress should do two things. We believe that it should create a meaningful accountability system that includes all service providers that receive public funds. We believe that there should be a shift in focus from sanctions to support for achievement, and that we should fully fund the requirements of NCLB. We believe that the public deserves a meaningful accountability system. Such a system cannot rely on a single static measure of student or school success. The current system is overly dependent on annual state assessments and therefore misrepresents the successes and the challenges of our schools. We support the adoption of an academic growth model to determine progress. Additionally, given that each state adopts its own standards, comparisons across states are misleading. We support the recommendation of the Council of Great City Schools to develop and adopt national educational standards in reading, math, and science. In addition, under the existing system, school districts are required to contract with outside providers of supplemental education services. But districts are prohibited from choosing providers based on student outcomes. Public schools are willing to be held accountable for results. We believe all providers of educational services that receive public funds should be held to the same accountability standards. Secondly, Minneapolis Public Schools strongly supports good research-based instruction. We believe that NCLB has evolved from its intent to raise student achievement to focus more on technical compliance within the sanction system. We recommend that the Act be amended to shift its focus from mandating sanctions to ensuring that schools receive the assistance they need to raise all students' achievement. Finally, Minneapolis Public Schools proposes fully funding NCLB. Although 2 years of increased federal funds accompanied the enactment of NCLB and the implementation of new mandates, federal funding has flatlined since 2004 while NCLB performance requirements continued to increase. Further federal funding increases were tied up in a series of set-asides on the NCLB, diminishing flexibility and leaving fewer resources to the classroom to achieve the goals of the program. For example, Minneapolis Public Schools is required to set aside $4.2 million for supplemental education services, much of which goes to outside providers that, as I said earlier, are not accountable to the public for results. These dollars that could be provided to our schools. We'd like to thank you for your time and consideration of this particular resolution and all that you can do to support the continued learning of students, not only in the Minneapolis Public Schools, but across the state.
Thank you very much. Are there questions or comments for?
Madam Chair, just could we get some hard copies on all these? I can't write that fast. yours and the Education Minnesota, if they have something too.
Well, this one is the Education Minnesota, I believe. Okay. But if we had your note, that would be appreciated. Other questions? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Wieger, I don't have a question with your testimony. I appreciate it very much. Okay. But a question with the resolution. A couple of your whereases seem to point to leading to a different conclusion than you have, and I just wondered why you challenged the violation, potential violation of the 10th Amendment of interfering in the states, as well as the federal intrusion in the next whereas of state and local control. And then you just say, but stay with the business and just tweak it a bit. You know, why did you include those if you weren't going to be stronger in terms of what your
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, good catch. You're correct. It's among the concerns, but I didn't want to go all the way and saying let's execute it, but you know, it needs major surgery. Those are among the concerns, though we don't obviously ask for the repeal, though there are cases in court now as we sit that do challenge the legality of the Congress to do this, and I put it there, but I guess what Congress would look at, if anything, on these would be the resolve clauses. And the other part, too, the discussion here has provided the foundation for a lot of additional discussion we'll have on reporting requirements and the like in Minnesota. But I don't feel as compelled to discuss the 10th Amendment and federal intrusion issues. It's out there.
Are there other comments, questions? Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe the commissioner, if she can make a trip back to the table real quickly. I just wanted to ask a question based on some of the testimony that we've heard, that in your opinion, or maybe the department has looked at this more in detail, has there been any improvement in school performance, academic performance, as a result of No Child Left Behind? Has that been something that you have had, or the department has looked at and said, well, we have made some progress, that, or has there been no progress made?
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, yes, we are beginning to track that, and we have been tracking that. In fact, we were just talking with a press person, and Columbia Heights would be an example where one of their schools has just made some extraordinary progress with
took it right off of the website.
Making a difference. NCLB is making a difference. Fifth grade mathematics proficiency increased by 4 percentage points. The black-white achievement gap in fifth grade reading narrowed by 5 percentage points. The black-white achievement gap in fifth grade maths narrowed by 5 percentage points. The Hispanic-white achievement gap in fifth grade reading narrowed by 3 percentage points. The poor-not-poor achievement gap in fifth grade math narrowed by 3 percentage points. Those are some examples. And then we also are really trying to look at those sites that are just beating all the odds and what's happening in those. I was going to say Columbia Heights is an example in one of their buildings, and I don't think that our communications person is here anymore, but we've got some examples that we're trying to now drill down and say what is going on. And then particularly if we're finding that their district or sites are beating the odds, let's say in the African American group, are in the Hispanic, are in, you know, the Asian population. What's going on? We know St. Paul School District, because they have had a high Hmong population, have really figured out, you know, how to reach and educate Hmong children. And, you know, now those children are moving into other areas of our state. And also, indeed, you know, other states are asking Minnesota, what are you doing there? So our sites are starting to figure out some of this stuff, and we want to try to get that information. Unfortunately, our capacity is very limited right now at the department. I'll put a little plug in there. You know, we're trying to do the best that we can do some of this research and analysis so that we can get it out to states. Another interesting thing that you can look at, we have the Standard & Poor's has a very comprehensive analysis of lots of things, financial and academic, and they do have some comparisons. You can kind of plug in different demographic site, you know, examples, and then look at sites that are comparable to see who's beating the odds and you know, who's maybe struggling. And we're trying to start to do some of that analysis. Are we doing enough? No, we're not, and we need to do more. But as I said, we've had kind of limited capacity, and we'll hope to do more of that in the future. Thank you, Senator Wigger.
Yes, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess following up a little bit on Senator Olson's comment, I've been sitting here for the last couple hours thinking that maybe we're getting a little too subtle and a little too technical, and maybe this should just simply read, "Dear federal government, please back off," or maybe something a little stronger. But I appreciate where Senator Wigger is trying to go, and he's trying to be a little more diplomatic than that. So I hope they'll pay attention to the language that we end up passing. I just wanted to point out, I've asked staff to pass out a resolution on the same topic that was introduced and passed by the Senate 2 years ago. It was passed unanimously, and it talks about urging the federal government to not expand No Child Left Behind to the high school level. Right now, all the anxiety and the waivers and amendments are about the regimen that exists today, which is for ages and grades younger than high school. There are proposals to expand this, and I think much of the conversation we've heard today and the testimony points to the fact that we need to take this back to the shop, we need to go slowly. And we heard very compelling testimony 2 years ago from schools, from school districts, from their curriculum staff, saying that until we digest this first wave of No Child Left Behind, that we need to throw up a stop sign for further expansion to the high school level. So I apologize for not sharing this language with you, Senator Wigger, until today, but I guess one of the things I'd ask the committee to consider is, in the language that I handed out, I think there's a resolved sentence or two that might fit pretty easily into your language, Chairman Wigger, and it's the language under on lines 2-6, 2-7, and 2-8. Specifically urging Congress to refrain from expanding NCLB at this time. So I'd offer that as discussion, and I don't know if procedurally we can offer language from a former resolution, but I'd hope we can.
Madam Chair, I'd consider a friendly amendment.
That's good. Yeah. Those in favor?
On Senator Michelle's motion.
Madam Chair, if I can just make it a little more clear then, what I would offer then is the following sentence: "Be it resolved by the legislature of the state of Minnesota that it urges the Congress of the United States to refrain from expanding NCLB to our nation's high schools at this time." And I think it would fit in, I guess I'd be open to ideas, but it could fit in on Senator Wieger's resolution as the first resolved clause after "now, therefore" on line 2-2 of the second page. So just to give staff a little more specificity there.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson, yes.
I, I would have suggested that you move it to put it between 2.6 and 2.7 as the second one, because I think we're trying to amend what's going on, but please don't expand. I think that follows a logical sequence. Would you incorporate that?
I would incorporate the Olson suggestion.
Agree.
And move the suggested language.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, that completes our testimony. I am ready to move the Senate file as amended, unless there's anyone else that would like to add something. The audience?
Sorry.
We have one person.
Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Weiger. Dr. Karen Ephraim from EdWatch, I just want to say that I just want to relish this moment on how bipartisan and broad the support is for doing something about No Child Left Behind. And I thank Senator Weiger for what he's doing, but I would actually agree with Senator Stumpf and Senator Olson and Senator Michelle that it should probably be stronger, and I would ask you to also consider the legislation that was passed last year or the year before by the Senate that was offered by Senators Bachman and Kelly to actually withdraw from No Child Left Behind, because it is an absolute race to the bottom. It is not bringing, even though the goal is to bring children up, all it does is require more and more and more children to meet a very basic, very minimal proficiency, and that isn't going to do much for the achievement gap or for the children that are doing well. So thank you.
Thank you, and I understand Senator Bonhoeff has a comment.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and I know that people would like to have closure, but I do have to say that I, too, appreciate what Senator Stump, Senator Olson, Senator Michelle said, and I've been wrestling with the difficulty in voting for the resolution when it seems like maybe the more clear message is to vote for a repeal. But I want to commend all the people who testified today, as well as Senator Weger, that even though many of us wish that was the outcome, I think the reason why we're recommending something other than that is because we want to voice our strong support for the ideology behind No Child Left Behind. So while you know, I'm wearing two hats, one in that I think the actual No Child Left Behind is flawed and does not move forward those, you know, each and every student, and I have a big commitment to, you know, the best and brightest as well, as I think they're critical to our future. And I am going to support this resolution because I think it is important to stand behind the commitment. But I do have to say it's difficult. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff.
Please butt out. Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 28 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That passes.
Okay. Thank you very much, members. And I wanted to, in the remaining few minutes, and we won't always go until 5:30, but Senator Olson, we'd like you to introduce yourself for the many new members, and 30, 40 seconds, and then also for staff, and to, you know, tell us a bit or two about yourselves. So, Senator Olson?
Jen Olson, State Senator from District 33, Western Hennepin County, and I think probably the most ancient member on the committee, both from length of service as well as as well as probably age. But I'm lead Republican for education funding. I'm sharing that Senator Han is our lead Republican for this policy committee now. But looking forward to the expanded committee and good dialogue.
Thank you. Our committee administrator.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Walsack. I'm the committee administrator for Senator Weger and for education. And I look forward to really working with all of you and listening to your concerns and what you guys have to say.
I'm Kara Zetzman. I'm legislative assistant for Senator Wieger in the Education Committee, and I, too, am really looking forward to this year and this session and working with each and every one of you to make sure it's run effectively.
Thanks. Anne Marie?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Anne Marie Butler-Yunker. I'm the counsel for the committee, and this is my 12th session working on education issues for the Senate.
Thank you.
12?
Shelby?
Hi, I'm Shelby McQuay. This is my third session working for the Education Committee, and I'm the legislative analyst.
Eric?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Eric Nauman with the Nonpartisan Fiscal Staff. 11th session, I think. Long time.
Thank you. Great. And behind the committee table, we have other participants. And our committee page, Mr. McNamara.
I'm Steve McNamara, the committee page under Senator Wieger.
Thanks. And others that are a part of the team?
Ed Cook, I'm with the Republican Caucus researcher.
Danny Elling with Senate Majority Research.
And okay, anyone? Okay, with Senator Stump's office?
Kevin McHenry at CA for the budget division. So.
Well, great. Members, our next meeting will be at the Science Museum. We're going to hear from an expert, Mr. Schmidt, on rigorous standards, something that we've had a lot of discussion on today. There will be some meetings prior to that you've had emails about and you're encouraged to participate. We won't meet on the holiday, Martin Luther King. Wednesday the following week, we are looking at talking about QComp. And for subsequent meetings, I'm getting a lot of ideas, advice from you. Please keep that coming. And if you want a meeting scheduled in one of your school districts, please let me know on that as well, and we will accommodate. There being no further business before the committee, we're adjourned.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.